David, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you going?
Very well, thank you. So, David, I grew up in an era where believing in the reality of climate change is an accepted fact. In 2013, the non-profit Climate Council reported a clear link between global warming and the increasing severity of frequency of bushfires. It feels like recently, though, there's been a recent shift towards the denial in public discourse. What factors of the science do you think people are still getting caught up on?
The way I like to explain what's happening now is that we're observing fire behaviour and fire event that we were expecting, you know, a very marked change in fire behaviour with climate change, and now we're beginning to see really unusual fire events. And it seems that we're crossing the divide from a theoretical, hypothetical future into experiencing this future. And obviously, when you get into reality of these things, there are still lots of question marks and there are lots of complexities because the old problems remain. You've just got a new problem. So the way I like to think about it is climate change is sort of making a bad situation worse.
Yeah, so with all of these fires going on, I've heard about a phenomenon called the pyrocumulus, or fire clouds, that have the potential to help or hinder wildfires. And there are a few above us in the studios where we sit right now. What are the environmental effects that result from these pyrocumulus weather systems?
Oh, so the pyrocumulonimbus systems, but they're a really good example of what I was talking about, actually, where they were more of a theoretical thing or a really rare, under certain unusual conditions, you could get a fire that would couple to the atmosphere and create a fire-driven thunderstorm, basically, heat engine. And because of the way, one of the remarkable properties of water at vapor, it's got embodied energy. How thunderstorms work is as they cool, they release energy. But when you add fire into the mix, you can punch these amazing plumes of smoke and water vapor up into the stratosphere, sometimes as high as 15 kilometers. And that's a really remarkable phenomenon because it sucks in air, get black hail, more lightning storms that can start more fires, in extreme cases, pyrotornadoes, so the fire whirlwind. So you have all of this remarkable behavior. But what's interesting about the pyrocumulonimbus is that theoretical or very rare black swan event suddenly has become more common. In fact, for a rare thing, that they're becoming easy to study because we're getting more steady supply of them around the world. And that's extremely concerning because these are the most extreme fire systems you can have.
Yeah, you mentioned fire tornadoes in there, which sounds like an absolutely terrifying threat, and I'm sure it is, but given the current conditions, is that something that we could expect to see, or is that the next step once the climate gets worse from its current position?
Fire tornado in the 03 fire in Canberra. So when you have a pyrocumulonimbus, you don't always get these extreme events. There was a fire tornado last year in California that picked up a truck and it threw around shipping containers and power poles. So they're very terrifying things. And the problem is as you get more pyrocumulonimbus, you are going to expose yourself to the more potential of these pyrotornadoes. So we're just looking at changing fire behaviour, I think, the real message because of the fires becoming more energetic, more intense.
Yeah, so in April and September this year, 23 fire chiefs tried to meet with the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, to warn that these bushfires would happen in greater intensity, and we're seeing that today. Last night on Q&A, a student asked why these warnings have gone unheeded by the PM, and why do you think these warnings have gone unheeded by the PM, and should the Prime Minister be taking these meetings with fire chiefs?
So that's, I think, a really valid philosophical question and a moral question, because you don't want to be terrifying people. So there's a responsibility to talk about this stuff in a very sensitive and considered way at paramount because of the human suffering involved. But also because we're not talking about this threat when the fires aren't occurring, it puts a scientist in a moral dilemma because if you don't speak when people are asking you to speak, then you haven't spoken. Because no one's asking you to speak when a fire disaster isn't unfolding, or rarely do they, or it doesn't have the same traction or the same currency, I suppose, in the marketplace of ideas. So I guess the decision we've made, a group of us made, is that we're very reluctant to talk about, you know, fire management and climate change when these terrible events were happening. But now, because they're happening so frequently and they're so concerning, as long as I think people are sensitive and respectful and responsible and trying to communicate optimism and solutions, then I think it's appropriate for scientists to talk about this stuff, because in a way it's a failure of your duty if you don't. It's also that the sensationalism that the media can get wrapped up in can leave people feeling pretty shell-shocked and not knowing what to do, very confused and disempowered. And if you talk about the fact that we understand these phenomena, we're thinking people are dedicating their lives, are thinking for solutions, and there's lots of discussions, and the scientific community, which is increasingly focusing on trying to understand these very unusual fire events which are occurring all around the world, I might add, in flammable landscape. I think that's a really important contribution, and it's a responsibility, but it's also important.
Yeah, I often see the gun control situation in America mocked for people discussing whether or not it should be discussed at any one time, and I think that this being an arguable equivalent, it's very good to be having these discussions and making sure that we're setting the example by actually taking action and having these discussions. Finally, before you go, David, for people in fire-affected areas, what things should they be packing? What things do you think you would add to the RFS's recommendations for fire evacuation?
Well, I think that the fire agency got a pivotal role in disseminating information and helping people make really, really consequential judgment calls about the decisions that are really, in the worst case, could be life or death, or certainly massively transformative in life. If you lose your property, that's going to change how you live the rest of your life, just the trauma of losing your home. So I would recommend to anybody in bushland settings who isn't really across the complexities of this and not physically and mentally prepped, just to go. It's just no point being in that firing line. It's just not sensible. And, you know, houses are replaceable, but lives aren't. So that's what you got to do. You just got to go.